This is the House of Hockey podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. Hockey is more than a game. It's a lifestyle. It's you, the diehard supportive fans, your favorite players who are on the team you cheer for and the organization who supports them.
The companies that make your gear, bags, and beer league sweaters. The hockey moms and hockey dads and everything else that makes this House of Hockey your home. Come on in. I'm Breezy.
And I'm Ray Ray.
And this is our house.
Pigskin fans, the moment you have been waiting for all season is right around the corner. And DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55, is bringing back their golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. All you have to do to get your share of these huge prizes is enter DraftKings' free Super Bowl prediction challenge. Once you submit your picks, you will get a free instant prize up to $25,000. And if you have the most predictions correct, you could win the top prize of $1 million. Download the app now, enter the free prediction challenge, answer questions like who'll score last, and boom, get ready to make it rain. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion, that's with a B, to its players since 2012. So they know a thing or two about big paydays. So here's what you have to do. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN, that's for the Hockey Podcast Network, to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. So use promo code THPN now and enter the free $55 million Super Bowl challenge only at DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Well, here we are, episode 46, and we got a sponsor for DraftKings.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. A free chance to win money.
Yeah, I'm going to do that too. I was like, all I have to do is download the app and then enter in THPN, and then I could win.
I could win. Why not? Makes it more fun to watch the Super Bowl too.
And hey, probably will have better luck with that than winning the lotto, because I've spent so much money on lotto tickets the last 2 weeks. I'm like, what am I even doing?
You know,
I did research.
If you want to win the lotto, you got to buy a lotto ticket.
It's true. And I did research. I had a spreadsheet going on like the probabilities of, and I'm not good with numbers or math, of like numbers being selected. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have a single number on my lotto ticket. A single number.
I think you might have better luck with DraftKings.
I think so. So I'm going to do it.
Anyway, welcome to episode 46, everybody. I'm Ray Ray.
And I'm Breezy. And this week we have a dynamite guest. Ray Ray.
Yes, we do. Rick Nifty Middleton. He is an NHL legend. He played 14 seasons in the NHL. 12 of his seasons were with the Boston Bruins. They even retired his jersey number.
Which we talk about in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Number 16. No one in the Bs can wear that. He also is president of the Bruins Alumni Association. So he talks all about that. And then, of course, his days playing, great stories. And then something you guys might find really interesting is that he coached the 2002 U.S. men's sled hockey team to win gold for the first time ever. They were like an underdog losing team. And after his career playing in the NHL, Nifty tells the story of how he got that job and how they won gold and how they're making a movie about it coming to the silver screen for you.
And you may just see a little cameo of our girl Ray Ray.
I basically begged Nifty to let me be a reporter in the movie. Because that's so cool. Come on.
That is cool. That is cool.
So stay tuned for that. You're really going to love it. Nifty's so like charismatic and has so many great things to say. He's so well spoken and offers a lot of great opinions about the game and his time
Yeah.
playing.
It's kind of like hanging out with someone you have a lot of respect for, and you just want to listen to all the stories you can hear. And that's kind of how we were. We were just kind of hanging back and relaxing and listening to all these the good things that he was saying about the sport and his time and about players. So it was fun. Good times.
You'll enjoy it.
Yep.
So we've had what, 7 games of hockey as of when we're recording this? Six?
I think so.
5 or 6 games and
Depends on what team you're following.
right with COVID and all of that. But
Yeah.
full disclosure, I've only been able to watch highlights of the Blackhawks because I have had a crazy week of work and things going on that I have not had time to sit down and watch. So I've been watching the 8-minute highlight recaps, which are really lowlights for the Blackhawks, except for we finally got a win on Friday, which
Ugh.
was, I think, just helps with morale. But I think
Yeah.
overall, my thought is this really is what a rebuild looks like for the Blackhawks. Like this. It's just, it's a rebuild. It's a
It's
rebuild
a struggle
season.
bus.
Yeah, it's gonna
Full
be
struggle bus.
up and down, and I'm just keeping realistic on that, and I'm not getting
Yeah.
my hopes up that this that they could be contenders, because they're not gonna be contenders. I don't know
Well,
what that was, but that's,
I don't know either, but it looked cool.
it's like Rocky, like it could have been a contender, or is that from a different movie? I fuck that up all the time.
Well,
He
we're
could
not
have been
very
a
good at
contender.
things.
That's a quote from a movie.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a big movie buff unless it's like horror movies. So yeah, I think teams are struggling in general. Obviously, the Blackhawks are having a hard time for multiple reasons. The Kings just got their first win the other day. They've been a complete struggle bus. I'm just starting to talk about my teams now. Sorry,
Go,
but
no, go. That's all I had.
the Leafs have been doing pretty well. They're looking strong, and the Nashville Predators got their butts handed to them by the Dallas Stars last night, and it was embarrassing. But they've been looking pretty well, but we're just moving on from that.
Breezy doesn't want to talk about it, guys.
No, I don't want to talk about it. But in other
Well,
news,
especially, wait, because we have to clarify, this was the Stars' first game of the season because their season got delayed. So it was extra hurtful.
yeah, it wasn't good. The only thing bad about that game was I was able to enjoy the new, and they're not a sponsor. I wish they would sponsor us. Maybe they can. Truly iced tea. It is so
Ooh.
freaking good. It's ridiculous. Like, and I'm not a Truly fan, but the Truly iced tea's so good. I went and bought 2 more packs today. That was the
That's
only thing that got me through.
an alcoholic beverage,
It
an adult
is.
beverage.
It's an adult beverage, 21 and older. Do not drink underage and drink responsibly.
Yes, exactly. Not like we're driving
Yes.
anywhere, so stay home and be safe,
No,
kids.
exactly. But I highly recommend. I
Interesting.
will give you a full review if you want to DM me. I can tell you how I feel about them. They're very good. Bud Light Lemonade is also very good. I tried both of those. That's my little hot take of this moment.
I
Anyway,
like
back
it.
to you
I like
on the
it.
radio.
Back to you, folks. Back to you, Ray. First of all, I'm just like very happy that I have access to hockey. And in
Yes.
the moments that I do have time to watch, I'm very happy that I get to watch it. There's also just so much hockey happening again, like we had when the bubble playoffs was going on. So it's a little overwhelming to me, but I'm not complaining. Let me make that very clear. Shut the front door. There's something about Austin Matthews' fashion and physical style choices with the mustache and the hairdo that makes me want to punch him in the face.
I feel like if he were to wear like black on black or like a pinstripe black, I feel like he would be a part of like the Addams family.
God, he looks like the
The
dad.
dad with the mustache. He's
Yeah.
just like,
Yes, that's ex
Addams family.
I don't I like I can't put my finger on it. I don't know the guy. I could care less about the Leafs. Like, it doesn't bother me in the least. I don't feel threatened. But like, I see him, it's like he's trying too hard and he doesn't live up to his potential on the ice. And something about like the outward, like dressing weird with like the bucket hats and then like the Louis Vuitton scarf and like, it's just, he's
very
like, bro.
European. Very European.
And he's not from Europe.
He's from Arizona.
From fucking Arizona. Like, I mean, I'm all for people like expressing themselves, but I think it's just something that doesn't align for me with like the cockiness off the ice and then the like the not it matching on ice.
Mm-hmm.
Like something to me is like, you don't get the right to be that way. Like, you're not, yeah, Dennis Rodman. Like, Dennis Rodman owned his shit off the ice, like off the court, like where he dressed wild and crazy and like expressed himself, but he also like delivered when it counted. So I think that's why I kind of like bubbles in me and I am just like, ugh, except I have to give Austin Matthews credit where credit is due. The only good thing I've ever seen from that guy on social media that made me very happy, but also very mad at the same time, was that he alerted me to the fact that one of my favorite television shows, Peaky Blinders, is returning and they're gonna make a movie about it. And I was like, yes. And then I was like, who told me this? Austin Matthews, damn it. Now I can't, damn it. Why did this really good news have to come from him? Maybe I like him a little bit now. If you don't know Peaky Blinders, you're missing out. Netflix, baby. Fantastic television.
Fantastic television.
And yeah, so that's my shut the front door on Austin Matthews. Hmm.
You know, we were just talking about Austin and having like a character aspect to him.
Yeah.
And it clicked to me. I think I know why I like Matthew Tkachuk.
Why?
Because he kind of reminds me of Morgan Wallen, and I love Morgan Wallen.
Who's Morgan Wallen?
I don't know if we can be friends anymore. This might be our last episode.
No, I don't. I'm Googling. A singer?
Yes.
Oh. I what's the song he sings that I would know?
What song does he not sing that you should know?
Oh God.
I'm giving you a lesson after this episode.
Okay.
Anywho.
He's a country singer, everybody.
He's a country singer. He's got the mullet. He's just that kind of guy. He reminds me, Matthew Tkachuk kind of reminds me of Morgan. And I think that's why we're just going to move on from this because now I'm just, I'm dragging.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's fine.
That's okay. I forgive you.
It's okay.
I will know everything about him when we're done.
Shortly.
I will put on all his music and put it on repeat to make up for
He released a double album. There's like 20 songs and they are so good. Breezy's barbecue kit. I am doing a cherry smoked pork butt. Yeah, so I'm gonna do some, it's basically a cherry rub and it's been smoking, it'll be smoking for 10 hours. That's gonna be good. Pulled pork sandwiches. A pork butt is not really a butt, it's a shoulder. Everyone don't freak out. I don't know why it's called pork butt. I think we've had this conversation before, but yeah, that's what I'm doing.
This week's episode of the House of Hockey podcast is brought to you by...
Looking to spice up your sex drive and your love life? Try Libido Drops for Women. It's formulated to enrich your sexual response, arousal, and lubrication. Libido Drops are healthy and organic. Just add a few drops to water each day. Try Libido Drops with no risk, complete satisfaction guarantee, or your money back. Order your bottle of Libido Drops for Women now at libidodrops.com.
And we have a promo code for all of you House of Hockey podcast listeners. You will get 10% off your first order when you visit libidodrops.com. In the checkout, in the coupon code, enter hockey 10. That's Hockey 10 for 10% off your first order of Libido Drops. Go to libidodrops.com. Our podcast is proud to be on the Hockey Podcast Network, and the network is home to many other incredible podcasts, including this one.
Calling all Jets fans and foodies. What's going on, guys? I'm Brandon Rewicki, the host of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. Look, if you love Jets hockey, this is the place for you. In-depth breakdowns from every game, a deep dive into the big plays and moments from Winnipeg's season, and all the Jets talk you will not find anywhere else. We got it for you on Skates and Plates. Plus, if you love carbs and everything tasty, we jump into the world of food as well. Once a week, we also speak with a member of the local culinary scene to highlight their great stories and the great food they put out. So there it is. Hockey, Jets, food, drink, everything good in life. It's right here on Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Please give a big welcome to NHL legend Rick Nifty Middleton, who has played 14 seasons in the league, earning 988 points in 1,005 games. He spent the last 12 seasons with the Boston Bruins. He scored 45 goals and 100 points in 114 playoff games. 114 playoff games. That's crazy. And number 16 is now retired in Boston. Nifty is currently the president of the Bruins Alumni Association. And he coached the 2002 U.S. men's sled hockey team to win gold medal, baby. And he's actually developing a movie based on that experience and his real life story. I hope you really enjoy our conversation with Nifty. Two years with the Rangers, or two seasons rather, and 12 seasons with the Bruins. You had a hat trick in your first Bruins game. Tell us about your time playing. I mean, like, I could rattle off all of your accomplishments and goals and moments, but
I'll go back a little. I'll go back a little bit. I'm from Toronto, Canada.
Right.
I grew up in the 60s, basically, when the Maple Leafs won 4 Stanley Cups. And, you know, in those days, you had 3 channels on TV. There wasn't anything else to do but go out and play hockey, especially if you're a young Canadian boy. And I was, my dad had bought a house in a new suburb of Toronto. So we had a bunch of new kids on the block, not the band, but a lot of young kids. Everybody seemed to be the same age. We had tons of players. And I was the organizer. I had the street light out in front of my house, and I played street hockey. Every day I wasn't on the ice, I was there. They froze a rink in the backyard for me when I was 4 years old. But, you know, it wasn't like, oh, my son's going to play in the NHL. Actually, I was playing baseball when I was like 6 years old, 5 or 6, softball. And my baseball coach was a hockey coach, and he talked my dad into bringing me out. Or I may never have even played hockey. So funny how things happen. Just grew up, you know, year after year in Toronto. And then at the age of 13, I switched organizations. I got the coach that was a power skating nut. And he told me to do ankle exercises at night, strengthen my tendons and my ankles, because I wasn't a very strong skater. And in 3 years, changed my life. And by the time I was 16, I got 6 full scholarship offers. One was to BU, Michigan Tech, Michigan U. And got drafted by the Oshawa Generals in the OHA, being hockey women, you know, the Ontario leagues. And Oshawa was only half an hour from my house in Toronto, so I ended up staying at home. I didn't play my first year I got drafted because I didn't feel I was big enough or strong enough. And I played a year of junior B in Toronto. And then I played 2 years of A. And my last year was my draft year. In those days, you had to be 20 to be drafted. I didn't even start playing junior until I was 18. I see these guys playing in the NHL at 18. I'm just amazed how good they are. But my draft year was my best year ever. You know, if you're going to have a good year, you want to have it in your draft year. And I led the league in goals with 67 that year, and third in points, believe it or not. And the Rangers took me in the first round. It was a dream come true. And the draft in Montreal, my parents went up there. They weren't televised in those days. It was 1973.
Wow.
And if you remember, well, you're too young to remember, but you probably know this, the Bruins and the Rangers played for the Cup in 72, and the Bruins beat them out in six, and I got drafted by the Rangers the very next year. So they still had a Stanley Cup caliber team, so I couldn't crack the lineup, and they sent me to their farm team, which was Providence, Rhode Island. So I was in New England when I was 19 years old, living in Cranston, Rhode Island, playing for the Providence Reds. And the first year they built what they call the Dunkin' Donuts Center now, it's still there. And it was awesome. My first time really away from home, and got used to it very quickly. 10 single guys in an apartment building, you know. I still have great memories of that year. And the next year I made it up to New York, like 2 years in New York. First year I had 18 goals by Christmas, and then I got a stick in the mouth, lost 4 teeth and 16 stitches. And I couldn't eat very well. They took me on the road, and we had a game in St. Louis, Chicago, and then into Minnesota a week later, and a guy came to hit me. I went to miss the check. I went over on my own left ankle, and I fractured my ankle a week later. So.
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez.
I only ended up with 22 that year. I had 18 by Christmas. And that ruined the rookie of the year chances. And then the next year was the year of the big trade. They fired Emil Francis. They traded Derek Sanderson. They traded Brad Park and Jean Rattel for Phil Esposito, Carol Danley, and three coaches that year. And it was the only year in my career I missed the playoffs. And I was probably having a little too much fun. I'll admit it. I was 20, 21 years old in New York. But when you're on a winning team, they don't really care. When you're not winning, you know, they look at everything. And Espo came to the team, and it wasn't that he wanted – to get rid of me, he wanted one of his old wingers, from what I've read in his books and stuff, from Boston. So that's how it happened. He convinced John Ferguson, our third coach that year, to get one of his old wingers from Boston, and they showered on me, so they decided to make the trade, and they traded me to the Bruins. So, you know, Nobody wants to be traded, but when I started, and that was in May, so I had the whole summer to really think about it. And, you know, more I thought about it, I'm thinking, geez, we didn't make the playoffs in New York. And now I'm going to be playing with Brad Park. Bobby Orr at the time was still on the team, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, this might be fun. And unfortunately, by the time I got to Boston training camp in September, Bobby was gone. One of my biggest regrets. But I already knew Brad Park, Jean Rattel, and then Peter McNabb, who just got traded from Buffalo there. So him and I roomed together for 8 years. And we went to the finals my first 2 years in Boston. I went from not making the playoffs to the Stanley Cup finals 2 years in a row. Unfortunately, against Montreal, who, you know, most of the players are in the Hall of Fame today. But
yeah. Well, a friend of the podcast and your friend Brad Park, who you just mentioned, I, of course, hit him up for any good questions or insight to ask you about. And he said to ask you about why you were really traded to Boston. I know you said because of Espo wanting a winger, but is that the true story?
Well, it's a true story. Like I said, it wasn't like one.
Or is that the only reason?
Well, it wasn't the only story, but it was.
Okay, let's hear the other story. Better than
Espo's book. It had to be true, but. What happened was that Derek and I played together my rookie year. And Derek, a lot of the Rangers still hated his guts from the 72 Cup Series. Then he was cocky and brash. And so myself and the other rookie at the time, Ron Greshner, you know, and Steve Vickers and a couple of young single guys, you know, really didn't care. And we would hang out with Derek. But then they traded him the next year, and there's always rumors about him and the party and everything. I'm not even going to go into that. But the next year they traded him, and then some reporter asked me, or they put it in a paper that the reason they traded him, he was getting two of the younger players into training problems, Rick Middleton and Ron Greshner. That was like 3 weeks after he was already gone. So I'm like, that's not good. They're using him as a scapegoat, you know, us as a scapegoat, or the reason that they traded him. I didn't like having my name in the paper, you know. Mm-hmm. So I said, some reporter asked me a couple of weeks later. I didn't say anything bad. Next day, New York Post, Middleton takes shot at boss, inch high headlines in the New York Post. And that started the whole process of it. And but I think what Brad's referring to is my lifestyle in New York, and, as I just explained.
Mm-hmm.
No, we used to hang out at a little bar on First Avenue called the Tittle Tattle. And the Jets and the Giants would play Sunday afternoon, and we'd play Sunday nights, and the place would just be jammed, just be jammed. But it was a lot of fun.
Hey,
got me to Boston.
So what was New York like then? Was it as amazing and incredible as we like picture it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I still get goosebumps going to Madison Square Gardens. You know, it's the only rink that's left that I played in. Once they build a new rink in Calgary, the Saddle Dome and Madison Square are the only two rinks, and they're building a new rink in Calgary. So, but I still get the goosebumps going in there. I have some great memories of those days. Only 2 years, but New York was New York. You know, it was my first. I was a rookie. It was so many impressionable. They kept us out in Long Beach, Long Island, because you could never practice at Madison Square Garden. So that was our alternate practice rink. Mm-hmm. And what's a young 20, 21-year-old to do? You know, the bars are open till 4. And, you know, I didn't sleep much.
Oh, man, do you have...
Ago.
Yeah. Do you have any fun like rookie party stories or anything that you can share with us? Any rookie pranks maybe?
Well, in those days they used to initiate you.
And
I was warned that don't let them get you at night when they've had a few. So luckily they didn't, but they got me in Oakland, California, where they're playing the California Golden Seals. Mm-hmm. And after practice one day, they grabbed me, and as I was heading to the shower, and they put a wet towel over my face, and I won't tell you what they did with a hockey lace, and the end of a hockey stick. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Oh, but, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I had to wear gauze pads for a while because I was cut so bad. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Now they wouldn't. But, you know, you look at it as being accepted to a team. That's the way I looked at it. You know, it wasn't like they didn't like me. It was like, okay, you're one of us now. And,
it was sort of like a respected and
yeah, in those days it was. A lot of times they shaved your head. So back in the days when you didn't wear helmets, you could always tell the rookies out there. I had hair down to my shoulders in those days, and they were nice enough not to shave my head.
So. Oh yeah. Don't want to ruin the flow, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially when you're like out and about in New York, you know, like to have a 70s. Shaved head, that was not the style then.
No. It was the 70s. It was long hair.
Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. I think the rookie parties have come a long way from that. But I think that
I hear. They all go out and drink all this expensive wine, and they make the rookies pay for them. But
exactly.
Most of them can afford it these days. Yeah.
Right. I think it's a really interesting way to show, like, you can really see the difference in the style of play from when you played, just based on your description of like your rookie initiation to like how it is today. And it's just so different. Like, what do you think are the biggest differences aside from like the speed and the youth?
Well, the goalies, to me, I mean, the goalie equipment, the style, the butterfly, mm-hmm. and the size. I mean, I was just watching the Bruins and New Jersey. And New Jersey's goalie Blackwood is 6'4", 225.
Oh,
he bends down. He bends down. His back is touching the crossbar.
Wow.
But I said I couldn't play today because there's no five hole.
How many five hole goals did you score in FC?
Oh, quite a few. The joke was the puck never hit the back of the net. Just like dunk it through, just steer it through, and the thing would wobble in over the line. You know.
I love it.
Still a goal.
Did you have a go-to move to try to, you know, change it up a little bit? So,
well, I always joke I only had one move, but I tried it so often that it had to work, you know, percentage of the time. But,
right.
And it was really, going down the right. I was a right wing and a left winger, but primarily on the right wing. What I like to do, and in those days you could change your speed. I mean, Mario Lemieux was classic at it. He always, people thought he was lazy, but he would go slow on purpose because he always had about four gears. And me, I like Barry, especially in the 80s when Barry Peterson was my centerman, he knew exactly when I wanted to get it, right around the red line. So I'd have a chance to have get my head up. And if I had enough of a gap, it was the word they use today, the gap, if the defense was back a little too far, then I would try to slow it down a little. So then the defense would have to slow down. And by the time I got to him, he'd almost be flat-footed. And I always like to throw it in between their feet and their stick, not through their legs, because defense are trained to look at you. They're trained to look at your chest and not take their eyes off you. But when you put it in between the feet and the stick, their peripheral vision, they can still see it. And it's very hard when you see that puck not to look down. And as soon as you look down, they're gone. So that was kind of the thing that I mastered over time. And hey, very often I get knocked on my butt because they wouldn't look down and I'd be giving it the head fakes and, you know, nothing would work. And then boom, they knock me down. But, you know, when you make them look silly, then it's hazardous to your health. And mm-hmm. then they want to come after you the rest of the game. So that was kind of my way of intimidating guys to get them really mad at me so they take stupid penalties.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, very smart. What about your time with the Bruins? So 12 seasons, which, first of all, that's incredible. Like, that's just amazing. And to play in good health, I assume, right?
12 seasons with one team, you know, you hardly see that anymore. And I was lucky to stay healthy. I was lucky to be on good teams. I was lucky to be on tough teams because it gave me a lot more room out there. The other teams had to worry about other guys a lot more than they worried about me. But, and playing on good teams, it always makes it a lot more fun. As I said, the only losing team that I was on, we didn't always have great years in Boston, but we made the playoffs all 12 years. Almost everybody made the playoffs in those days anyway. And a great bunch of guys. And, you know, some guys were there almost my whole career. Other guys would come in and leave. I look at it as two distinct eras. It was the end of the 70s, which I call the end of old-time hockey, because the helmet rule came in 79. And that basically changed the game. It did eventually. So I kind of caught the end of old-time hockey with guys that I grew up watching, like Rod Gilbert, Eddie Jockman, Pete Stemkowski in New York. I'm only 19, 20 years old when I'm playing with these guys, and they were my idols, and Brad Park, you know. And then I get to Boston, and I'm a little older now and such. And then through the 70s with the Don Cherry era, you know, going to the finals and then the semifinals with too many men on the ice. I scored with 4 minutes to go to put us up. We ended up with too many men on the ice with 2 minutes to go. De La Fleur tied it with a minute to go, and they beat us in overtime. And then they played the New York Rangers and beat them for the cup. Mm-hmm. And that would have been awesome to play my old team instead.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't happen. And then I was gone, and it was a different era. It was the 1980s now. And not the first year, but Jerry Cheevers, the old goalie for the Bruins, came in as coach, and he actually stayed 5 years, and I was his go-to guy. So he gave me all the ice time in the world, power play, penalty kill, first minute, last minute, and that's the only and put me with Barry Peterson and Mike Brzezinski on the line. And we put up terrific numbers, and that's really why they raised my jersey, because I was lucky enough to play with such great players and be able to come with them.
That's incredible. Describe how it felt for you to raise your jersey and, you know, have such a big impact in hockey.
I always say, and this is my belief, that I think it's the greatest honor an athlete can get, no matter what sport it is. But not everybody plays on one team their whole career. And I didn't. I was 2 years in New York. I was 12 in Boston. And to be recognized by the team you play most of your career with was unbelievable. And, you know, I honestly never thought of it until all of a sudden nobody was wearing it for a while. You know, you think, they put it away for what year? You know, somebody will have it on next year. After Marcus Thorne, I think, back in 2010, then 11, then 12, then 13, nobody's wearing it. I'm like, wow, maybe there's a chance. But, you know, I didn't think about it all the time. And it really took the, because there's no rhyme or reason for this. Terry O'Reilly retired in 1985. They didn't retire him until 2001. And I don't even know. I think it was they were building the building and I forgot. But there's no rhyme or reason to it. And then all of a sudden it was July, middle of the summer. Cam, I heard my secretary told me Cam was trying to get hold of me. And he calls me on alumni business because I'm the president once in a while. And I never even thought about it. And small talk, how's your golf game? You know, how's the family? He goes, well, we've decided we're going to raise your number. I went, what? Did I hear you? What? And honestly, I got emotional. And I'm not usually an emotional guy like that. And my wife came home 5 minutes later. I thought somebody died. She looked at my face. I went, no. I said, retiring number 16. So, and that was July. And the date was late November. So I had like 4 months to work on my speech.
Oh, wow.
And just, you know, all the congratulations. I was out 30 years. I mean, right. So I had a lot of people to thank. And I had the opportunity. Unfortunately, I've lost like 6 good friends. One of them I played with, Gary Doak, over the years. And we're great friends while I played and everything. And I found out all their kids were going to be at my jersey, my retirement. So I got an opportunity on the ice in my speech to thank all of them, recognize them all, and thank their kids for coming. When I knew them, they were just little pint-sized,
right.
Growing up. And so, and not often you get a chance to do that. And so I tried to take advantage of it and try not to forget anyone. But, you know, you know a lot of people live with 30 years.
When you're what was it that made it such an emotional moment for you? Like, is there anything in particular that like came up that you like just when looking was, back on the career or just, you know,
Cam called me or when I was on the ice?
Both.
You know, when Cam called me, it was just a shock and a surprise because I had thought of it, but I wasn't thinking about it at that moment.
Right.
So he did surprise me. And like I said, I was surprised myself how emotional I got. Mm-hmm. I still get a little emotional thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
But then, honestly, when I was on the ice, I was a little nervous in the hallway, but I had worked on my speech. Like I said, I had 4 months to work on it. I was going to read it. I wasn't going to try to memorize it and mm-hmm. screw it up. And I was under a time. We had a little walkthrough on the Monday where the thing was on a Thursday. We were silent. So they had a little walkthrough. So I knew exactly what I was supposed to do, where I was supposed to go. And all the guys, the Bruins, were on the bench. I walked by the bench. I said, don't shake hands with all of them. You don't have time. So by the time I hit the end of the bench, it was Bergeron and Chara. So I shook hands with them. And I wanted to shake hands with everybody out there. I didn't want to rush right to the podium. So Don Cherry was there. My old coach, I told you about, from Toronto, came down. He's in his 80s now. And the four guys that were up there, you know, Bork and Neely and Usyk and Terry O'Reilly were there to help raise the banner. And all my family was there. And four guys from the sled hockey team were there also. So I wanted to get a picture with each one of them on the ice. So I took my time. I went to each group of people, except my family, because I knew I was going to get pictures with them later. And then I went to the podium and just kind of read my speech. And once I got into a rhythm, it kind of went pretty easy. And it was kind of dark because the lights are on you. I could hear everybody in the stands. I couldn't really see them. So I just focused on not screwing up my speech. And it came off well. My best line, because I knew Don Cherry was going to come up and say a few words. And he's, you know, him and I always had an antagonistic relationship, and so he's always giving me a shot and I'm always sarcastic with him. So a week before it happened, I thought of this line because I wanted to get him before he got me. So I said to him, I said, you know, they asked me if I wanted to have some of my old 70s teammates down here with me tonight, and as I said that, I turned and I looked at Don and I said, but I told him I didn't want to have too many men on the ice. And seen the look on his face. And I said, okay, Don, you want to say a few words? Yeah, you should have seen the look on his face.
Oh my gosh.
It was a great line, though. Yeah, it was a great line.
That was good, Nifty.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It kind of ended his coaching career. It wasn't very nice. But it wouldn't have been me that was on the ice. You know, I could have been the one to blame. I was on the ice. But,
well, you mentioned Don Cherry. So tell me, what was the best quality for you having him as a coach? Like, what did you learn or what changed in your game?
Don was a player's coach, mm-hmm. and he actually cared. You know, he wanted to win more than anything, and he loved tough guys. I wasn't a tough guy, but he saw something in me that he took the time, you know, to, I guess, as they say, get you outside your comfort zone. So in New York, he always joked that at the end of the year, my first year, he had to introduce me to the goalie because I would only go one way, you know. And he played me my first game. I got a hat trick, you know, playing on the line with Jean Vitale and Johnny Busek. And I got 20 on the whole year because he basically didn't bench me, but he didn't play me on a regular line. He played me right wing, left wing, which really helped me later on. And then would play me in the playoffs and such. And so he broke me in almost like it was my rookie year, but it was my third year in the league. But Boston had a great lineup, and you just didn't walk into a job. And so I realized that. But it was very frustrating because I honestly didn't know what he wanted. And I thought I was doing everything the right way. But so he kind of pounded it into my head. And then the next year I played more in 79 a lot. And then by the time, as I said, we rolled into the 80s, I was ready for prime time. Yeah. So he really helped teach me the NHL game, if I was to put it into one sentence. Yeah.
That's all you can ask for from a coach, right?
Exactly. I mean, I was fortunate. I've heard of you know, guys, players, not only NHL, college, or whatever, when they have bad coaching or coaches that have an agenda, they quit the game. You know, the game goes south. They don't play him because of personality conflicts or whatever. I was so lucky. I only had two coaches growing up, and they're both great guys and helped me enjoy the game. I had good coaching in junior. I had good coaching in my rookie year in Providence. New York, good coaching, but I had like four different coaches in 2 years. So it was a little mishmash. But going to Don was Don actually had a game plan. He wanted his team, you know, he traded Phil Esposito. I mean, here's a guy that knew what he wanted, knew the type of players he wanted, and he wanted to build the team he wanted. And Harry Sinner went along with him. And I just deemed myself fortunate that he wanted to take from it.
Would you say that having, you know, the good coaching and whatnot made you want to be a coach for sled hockey?
It gave me the confidence that I could do it, even though, you know, I coached my kids, but, you know, I had never been a coach in any sort of adult, everything on the line type of thing. And honestly, I went in totally naive to that because I didn't even know what sled hockey was. And when I got the call asking me if I'd be interested, I only heard that their coach had quit in the world championships. They only ever won one game in the history. And would you be interested? And I thought I had to like answer right away or they're going to go somewhere else. So I said, yeah, because all I heard was hockey and Paralympics. And I figured I'm almost 50. I don't think they're going to be calling me for the Olympics anytime soon. Yeah. I figured, well, why not take the show? I hadn't done anything at that level in over a decade because I retired in 89 and now it was 2001. So I said, I thought I'd take a shot at it naively, you know, and I learned so much, you know, from these guys and how dedicated they are and what great athletes they are. And, you know, it's not the Special Olympics. It's a full check. Olympic sport, Paralympic sport at the top level, and they take it serious, and they try to hurt each other. It's just like NHL hockey. They go out there and they'll do anything to win, honestly. Yeah.
And you took the team to win gold, and you're what?
As it turned out.
As it turned out, your naivete paid off, and you brought the team to gold.
Well, this is what happened. My first, they asked, I think it was a test. They asked me to go to a camp in Tampa. It wasn't the selection camp. I hadn't been named, but they wanted me, me to go, and I think they wanted to see if I knew what I was doing. So I don't know why it wasn't, to this day, I don't know why Tampa, but so I get on the ice for the very first time with these guys, and I'm warming them up like normal. You know, you blow the whistle, you speed up and blow the whistle, go the other way. And then I blew the whistle and I yelled backwards. And they all stopped and looked at me. I'm like, oh no, they don't go backwards. So we actually got a good laugh out of it, but they did, then they understood that maybe he doesn't know that much about sled hockey. But obviously, I knew about hockey, and that's why they wanted to hire me. And then after that, the selection camp was in August of 01 in Buffalo. 30 guys from around the country showed up. We had to pick 15. And we were supposed to go to a tournament in Montreal on September 13th, and September 11th happened. And we never played. Japan came over. They sent them home. And we never went there, obviously. And I called an emergency camp 2 to 3 weeks after 9/11. And you guys were too young to remember, but nobody wanted to get on a plane.
Yeah, no.
But we didn't have another camp scheduled, our first camp, until the end of October. I said, you know, we've only got 6 months to do this. And one weekend a month. That's all I have to take this really bad team and try to not be embarrassed on our home ice, Salt Lake City. So we call an emergency camp, not knowing how many guys would fly in. I just, you know, from all over the country, Dallas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and every guy showed up.
Wow.
Every guy showed up. I mean, planes were empty. Airports were empty. And every guy showed up. So that was kind of the aha moment that these guys are ready. And we never played another team. We only had camps amongst ourselves in the cities where the guys played. And never, so we went in not knowing how we would do, but nobody had seen us either. So nobody was ready for us because we were the last seed, the sixth seed out of 16. So nobody gave us a thought because they were so bad in the world championship from Nagano in 98. So and then we ended up running the table and we outscored the opposition 22-3. Beat the number one seed Canada 5-1 in front of 6,000 people.
Amazing.
They never won another game and ended up playing Norway, the gold medal champs from Nagano. And we had a shot on 12-1 in the first period. We were only up 2-1, but up 3-1 early in the second, and then we got tired. And they made it 3-2. They tied at 3-3 in the third. Went to a 10-minute overtime. We still tied 3-3. Went to a 5-man shootout and went down to the last shooter. They scored on the first two shooters. Goalie came. In those days, the goalies had to come over to the bench after everybody shooting. The shooter go out, the goalie go out. The goalie comes off, the other goal. It was like Chinese water torture, right? Well, after they scored on the first two shots, our goalie, Manny Guerra, comes over. So I looked down at him, and I didn't know how to motivate him. So I said, you think you're going to stop one? He looks up, and he goes, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I said, well, now be a good time. Stop the next three, and we scored on the next three, and we won 3-2, and we won the gold medal. So you can see it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see it on YouTube.
Okay,
but
so
you see our movie when it comes out.
Exactly. So we want to get to the movie. You're in the process of making a movie called Tough Sledding that tells this whole entire story of what you just told us. So let me ask you about that in a second. Sure. Describe the difference between winning gold with the USA sled hockey team and having that like ultimate moment compared to having your number retired from playing. Or is that not even comparable?
Not that yet. Nobody's asked me that yet. It's I have to say, you know, having your number retired, that's kind of a finale. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it was kind of a way to put a bow on the end of a hockey career. People usually ask me, you know, what was your best moment in hockey? What was your most memorable moment? Thinking, you know, Stanley Cup, I was in three. I was in two Canada Cups. We won the Canada Cup in 84. I played on the line with Gretzky, you know, but then I said, no, I said 2002, winning the gold medal was in hockey, my biggest moment. I never won the Stanley Cup. And it's different because I was a player my whole life. And now I was a coach. So when you're a player, you're only in charge of yourself and you have your job and you try to do it be in the right place and in the ice, try not to, you know, have too many men on the ice, get on, get off, you know, all of, I did my whole life. But now I'm in charge of hockey players. And I wasn't really that nervous about it until we got to the gold medal game. And then I realized, you know, I hope I don't screw anything up for them. You know, all I have to do is make a mistake that costs them the gold medal. I never forgive myself. So I actually got a little nervous about that. But yeah. that was an incredible moment because of, you know, the old underdog thing coming in from 16. Honestly, never thinking gold medal. What we talked about was if we were going to medal, we had to beat Japan and Estonia and probably Sweden. But number one, Canada, number two, Norway, we thought, you know, probably not. So let's take a shot. Let's see if we can get a shot at the bronze medal. Never thinking that we'd run the table and get to the gold game and win the gold medal. No, that's why it was such a great thing.
That's incredible. Well, I think we should get to your movie. Can you take us through, you know, kind of what it's all about? And
well, it's funny, you know, we do a lot of these Zoom calls and everything, my assistant coach is a good friend of mine from my hometown, Tommy Moulton, and he's part of the group, and another gentleman by the name of Gary Brandt. And as the story goes, as president of the Bruins alumni, his son was going to MIT. They lost their charter for their hockey team. Make a long story short, we played them in an alumni game 3 years in a row. They raised enough money, and now they're hockey is solvent. So Gary and I stayed on as business, partners, which we still are today. But I didn't tell him the story. He's from Canada. He's from Toronto, grew up in Montreal. And he's a hockey guy. And he went to Queen's University. And I didn't tell him the story, like, right away, because I've told him so many times. I was just over lunch. He goes, "You're kidding me. I never heard this story." He said, "This has got to be a movie. I know some guys in L.A. I'll give them a call." So that's how it happened. They wrote a script. And Gary, being a businessman, he says, "Hey, I put in a plan ahead of us. You know, I thought 9 months we'd pound out a movie and it would all be good." 4 years later, we're still trying, and we've learned a lot about the industry. But we actually had a call with a gentleman from Tribeca Films Friday, because Tommy, my assistant coach's wife, is a De Niro. So, but he didn't want to use the family connection until we were ready and we knew what we were doing. So mm-hmm. We finally got in to talk to them. We also have a production crew from Massachusetts that do basically indie films. We thought we wanted to get this done for the 22 Winter Olympics. So mm-hmm. We thought we were in a hurry, but we kind of run out of time now. And so we have them as a film crew. So we're not really sure where we're going or how big this would go, because if you, just to use a name, say a Wahlberg, because he's a Boston guy, if he should be interested or try that, you know, Wahlberg, it's a lot of money for a film. That just raises the money. So we're going to take our time. We're going to make this right. And we're going to try to make it as big as possible. And we're not sure we can, but I think the story is good enough and rich enough, and the characters are. We're aiming to have the most disabled actors in any movie in history in our movie, because all the players will be played by disabled actors, not able-bodied actors playing disability. And then we're going to use the because you can't teach anybody to play sled hockey in a week. It's not easy.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to use the national team guys for all the ice scenes.
Nice.
And then the bubbles off the ice. Unlike Miracle, and I didn't know this, I always thought Miracle, the guys that played Ruzioni and Craig and those guys, I thought they were actors that could play hockey. But they were actually hockey players. They talked to act.
That's just like Slapshot. A lot of Slapshot is that way too, right?
Well, yeah. Slapshot. But they had to teach Paul Newman how to skate.
Well, that, yeah.
Skating lessons, I heard.
Yeah.
And I'm dying to find out why he wanted to make it so bad, because he couldn't even skate. How did he know it was going to be a cult movie? I played junior hockey with one of the guys in that movie, the big blonde kid that always has the girls under his arm. His name's Guido Tenisi.
If you look in the,
his name's Guido.
No.
They never gave him a line in the whole movie. And he's in the movie a lot. But he didn't say boo. He didn't have one line.
Was he like that in real life?
He's kind of a quiet guy, big quiet guy. But they could have given him a line because he was in a lot of scenes, you know, with the girl.
No, I mean like the ladies' man. Was he like a ladies' man?
No, not that I remember. We only played 2 years of junior together.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, I'm excited for you. I think everything that, you know, I've talked to you before we got on the podcast I know a lot about the film and your story, and I'm really excited for you because I think it's a really great story that just needs to be told. So
People can check it out and see it, but it's toughsleddingthemovie.com.
Yes.
Hopefully enough information on there. If anybody wants to be an investor, they can always get hold of it. Or audition. We were doing some virtual auditions. All everybody's sitting around, throw in a tape and you never know, you know, what's the casting, once we get to the casting part of this.
Let me know when you get to the casting part. I'm a really good reporter, Nifty.
I'm not in charge, but
don't worry. Honestly, I'll remind you.
All right.
Tell us about being the president of the Bruins Alumni Association. Like, paint the picture for us. Like, who's in the room? What are you guys doing? What are you talking about? Give us a little insight into that life.
Apparently, the Bruins alumni go back to about 1968. And where they play a couple games for charities, loosey-goosey, you know. But in the 80s, Johnny Busick started it kind of in the form that it is today, where we would play organizations, charities, and they would charge a fee. I'm not even sure what it was back in those days, and try to keep it as low as possible, but give the guys a couple bucks for taking the time out of their Saturday or Sunday and travel all over New England to go play these games to help raise money for different causes. So I started playing after my career in the 90s, probably early 90s, and then around the 2000, we decided to go to a kind of a board for the organization, and Bob Sweeney took over as president, and I was voted in as vice president. And then it was around 2007, they asked him to be the president of Boston Bruins Foundation, and they wanted to wear two hats, so he went over to the foundation, and I just moved up as president of the alumni. And as I said, when I was a kid, I was kind of an organizer of the sled hockey or whatever, you know, baseball in the park or whatever. I was just an organizer. And this is basically what I do now. So I really enjoy it. We're lucky. I have about 40 guys on my list of guys that can play or would play in games. And we do upwards of 30 games a year all over New England. And we even go up into Canada in the Maritimes because they don't have their NHL team, and they get the Boston TV station. So there's a ton of Bruins fans in the Maritimes. And we've gone up there, every year for about 10 years. Last year was the first year we didn't. And we go other places in Canada, but that Maritimes is closer, about 6 hours drive. And we've had a lot of fun over the years. What's fun is you play with guys you'd never played with because they're all different ages. We have guys ranging from late 30s up until, you know, myself, I'm the oldest on the team now. Terry O'Reilly just retired and I'm the oldest. But we have a couple young guys, and I'm not going to say who because they haven't played yet, but played for the Bruins. And so we're hoping they're going to come up as long as they keep their homes in Boston and start playing. It really takes, myself and other guys about 3 to 5 years to realize, shit, nobody's going to call me. you really still feel you can play in the NHL. You know, they fired me, but I could still play. And, and it takes you a few years to realize, so now you just do it for the camaraderie, to help raise money for a good cause. And then you get to hang out with something, because it's all about the dressing room. It's to hang out with the guys, have a couple of beers after the game, tell stories, run this, you know. And we're still doing it. We did 5 games this year, guys with masks on, and we taped them, and I made it a 4-on-4, so there's more room on the ice. And you can check that out on BruinsAlumni.com. We made 1-hour shows out of it. So Mark Land, who handles our website and everything, did a great job. He edits them all. And we got another 5 scheduled for early 2021, January through April. And hopefully next year we'll be back to the 30 games.
Yeah, hopefully, right? I think we want to get a full season going too.
Well, yeah, I know. I kind of like this though, the shortened season, because you got to come out of the gate like a horse race. If you don't come out of the gate, you're going to be left behind. You only got 56 games. I like that they're playing 2 games in a row for the most part. So it's like back-to-back games, kind of like baseball a little bit. And, you get some grudges started, because the first game, it carries over to the second game. Kind of like today with the New Jersey Devils, there's the fight in the first minute. So it's kind of like the old-time hockey, you know. And then you got different divisions. You got all the Canadian division, you know, which Canadians got to love, because that's never happened before. And so the Canadian team, like somebody said to me, is going to be guaranteed to make the semifinals anyway.
Right.
There hasn't been a Canadian team in the semis, I don't think, in a while, at least in the Stanley Cup final.
Right. Well, how do you think this season's going to go in general with, you know, the different divisions and, like you mentioned, the rivalries and playing, you know, the same team kind of back to back? Do you think that teams are going to have a harder time, or are they going to be able to have a better time, especially considering maybe there could be a bubble potentially or anything?
Well, look at what happened with Dallas. They haven't even started yet. I think it's going to be a harder time. I hope that, you know, they can still play, but they have those taxi squads. You know, it could give a lot of guys that don't get a shot a little chance to play in the NHL, which would be great. So it's going to be different. In past years, that when you wouldn't have that, then, you know, maybe a different team might win it. But this year, there's a lot of things that could happen to really good teams and really good players, you know, unfortunately. But it could let another team in that doesn't get affected by it and give them a shot at it. So it's just going to be interesting to see what happens and who really can last through this horse race and get to the end.
So who do you think is going to make it to the end? And don't be biased towards your Bruins.
Bruins haven't scored an even goal yet, 5-on-5. So they might have a hard time winning every game 2-1. But there's some powerful teams out there. I was surprised at Dallas last year. I mean, they really came out of nowhere. Vegas always has a good team. Edmonton, they get such powerhouse up there. I think there's at least a half a dozen teams that could go. Tampa, you know, they always go. Montreal seems to have improved. Buffalo has improved, but they got Washington in that first 2 games. But they're down 2-0-2, but they could come on and win 5-0. So it's just going to be interesting to see that. There's a lot of strong teams out there, but last year, I don't think a lot of people picked Dallas to last through the West. And I think this year, there may be a team that nobody's thinking about right now that may just do that. And I couldn't tell you who that is right now, honestly.
I agree. Yeah. That was I was on another podcast as a guest, and they were like, who do you think is going to win the cup? I'm like, I honestly cannot give you an answer, because this season is going to be so different. Like you were saying, with there's COVID, there's going to be players who are going to be out. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. This is a new schedule with the way the schedule is structured.
You get an injury, you don't have that much time to recover. I mean, you miss 8 games. I mean, that's, Is that one sixth of the season, not right. one tenth. So,
yeah, it's a different game for them now, having the shortened season. They can't rest on their laurels. Like, they've got to figure out that team chemistry right away, or else it's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I really think the teams that really get out of the box fast, you know, Washington looks like they've done it. I haven't even looked at the standings, so I don't even know who's an underdog. But, you know, you can have a sneaky team like a Florida. You know, I thought Florida would be a lot better last year, and they really didn't do it. Maybe this is their year.
Yeah.
You know, Nashville was great a couple of years ago, and they're still good, but they hadn't put it together the last couple of years. Maybe this is the year.
Yeah.
You know, Minnesota. There's so many teams.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know. And it's so hard to follow all the players. You don't know which ones have improved. And New Jersey looked better. But, how are they going to be in the long run? Rangers got pounded 4-0 the other night. You know, are they going to be able to come back? So it's going to be interesting. You at least win 10 games to kind of get out of the weeds here and see who's who. Yeah.
Yep. I agree. Well, before we get to our final three questions, I wanted to ask you if you had a really good story or a funny story from either your time playing or coaching the sled hockey team, just like a funny, good moment or something ridiculous that happened. I mean, I know there's a lot of ridiculous stories, but
a story that most women love, all right? Because it involves childbirth. And we were in Atlanta playing the old Atlanta Flames, and it was 1980. And Peter McNabb, Mike Milbury, and myself happened to go out for a couple of cold wings the night before the game. And Peter had just had him and his wife had just had a baby girl. So he was, and my wife at the time was very pregnant. And so he was the expert on childbirth at the table. So there was four cell phones. So I must have went he called his wife, and I went and must have called my wife on the payphone. I come back and he goes, how's she doing? I said, oh, her contractions are like 5 minutes apart. Yeah. I didn't know what that meant. He goes, she's going to have the baby. I go, get out of here. Oh, yeah, she's 5 minutes apart. She's going to have the baby. You got to go home. You didn't let you go home in those days. It's 11 o'clock at night in Atlanta. And I'm like, what? He goes, you got to go home. You're going to miss the birth of your first child. So we had enough beer that he convinced me. And we hopped in a cab, the three of us. We drove to Atlanta Airport. I must have called my neighbor. But we had to stop at the liquor store to celebrate on the way to the airport. So we bought two bottles of champagne. I remember looking over at the cab driver and all I took on the plane was the other bottle of champagne, no bag. Yeah. So I landed at about 4:30 in the morning, and my neighbor picked me up. I get home, and she's still 5 minutes apart. So I said, so we might as well go into the hospital. No use going to bed. Just let's go in. So we go into the hospital. All morning, she's in labor. Right? I call back because I'm not at the morning skate now. So they're like, where's Middleton, right? So I had called Peter. I said, what'd they say? They said, just get your ass back here. So the doctor, my memory of it is the doctor came out about noon. Now she's been in labor all morning, and he goes, she's really tired. He says, I could induce her. I said, well, that'd be good because I got to get to Atlanta. So he induced my wife. My daughter was born. Okay, see you later. Off in a cab to Logan Airport. I always get flights to Atlanta. I got hopped on a flight, landing in Atlanta, and grabbing a cab to the Omni, it was called in those days. And I'm looking at my watch, and I can really warm up. And I'm thinking, I'm running into the. Now I haven't slept in like 36 hours, right? And the first guy I see is Harry Sinden, and he's giving me this. Calling me over, and I'm thinking, I did all this. I come running back here, and I'm thinking he's going to find me, or maybe not even dress me. I'm thinking, right? He calls me over. Goes, I just fired Fred Creighton. I'm going behind the bench tonight. I went, great, Harry. Fred Creighton was the coach that followed Don Cherry. They hired after Don Cherry. He didn't even make it the year. He got fired on March 22nd, 1980, the day when my daughter was born. And we went out. I scored a goal in the first period, and we won 4-1. And I kept a puck in a drawer all those years, and I gave it to my daughter on her 30th birthday. It was a little trophy with the A on it, the old Atlanta A. Well, everybody loves that story. But I laugh today. They go, oh, they got to play 3 games. We used to fly commercial. And anyway.
Oh, yeah. But that's a good story. I like that story.
And that's the way I remember it. I think it happened.
We'll have to converse with your wife or your...
It could never happen today. It could never happen today.
No way. You can't even bring a bottle of champagne on the plane.
No.
I love it. No.
But, and then just funny. Go to the airport and hop on, you know, like it was right. The shuttle to New York. But, oh, yeah, everybody likes that story. That's one of the ones you can tell.
Exactly. That was a great one. I think that might have been one of the best ones yet.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And so that's even better, right? So at the end of every episode, we ask our final three questions. And it doesn't matter who the person is, you're still going to get asked these three questions. So we'll top it off. So who is your favorite? Could be anyone, current or past, your favorite hockey hunk.
Hockey what?
Hunk.
Hockey hunk.
Yep.
My goodness. Hockey hunk. There was a lot of ugly guys when I played. But I guess the guy that got all the notoriety for going out with beautiful women and everything was Ron Duguay in New York. Doogie.
All right.
As they call him, Doogie. I didn't play with Doogie. He came the year after I got traded, but we played a lot of charity games and such together.
And who's your favorite hockey lady?
Hockey lady, that's also a very good one. I got to know quite a few of the U.S. girls national team that won. They were the first ones to beat Canada for gold. 98, maybe. I honestly can't remember the year, but and I got to know her very well. She's a very, very great girl. Her name's Shelley Looney, and she scored the winning goal against Canada in the Olympics to win the first gold medal for a U.S. women, because it's always U.S. Canada in the women's hockey, so.
Right?
And Canada always had their way with them, you know, always beat them, even though it was always close. And they finally did it. And I just don't remember the year, but Shelley Looney. Yep.
That's awesome. And then our final question is, do you have a Sidney Crosby story?
Well, he's so much younger than me. I've never even met Sidney.
There we go.
I just know he comes from Nova Scotia, in the same town that Brad Marchand is from, I believe. And their hockey and Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, there must be something in the water up there.
Yeah. But,
really, right outside of Halifax. Yeah. They know how to grow their hockey players up there. But no, he always impressed me because he's a good leader. He's always he keeps his head about him, and he leads on the ice. I mean, he's a great player, not just because he scores a lot of goals. But he does it at the right times, and he's helped them win some cups. So I always like Sidney. I like to meet him one day. Put it that way. Always the same questions. You don't mix them up. Are those? Yeah.
Nope. Always the same. It's our. I guess you can say it's our iconic close off. I guess.
Oh. Tell us the name of the website again for the movie and the Bruins alumni, where they can watch the games, so people can keep up with you.
Sure. The movie is Tough Sledding at themove.com, and for the Bruins alumni, it's just bostonbruinsalumni.com, and we have what we call alumni TV now, and we just got it off the ground this year. Funny how, you know, in a pandemic, you know, sometimes new things come up, and I decided, looking at the NHL and the bubble, that we'd only play out of one rink this year to keep it safe. And that's how it all happened. We ended up taking the game. And, well, good things sometimes happen in tragedy. So.
Thanks for coming over to our House of Hockey podcast and hanging out with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Just look for House of Hockey podcast. We'll be back next week.